That's what I knew. Kelly, something
Christy,
like
you ready to go?
Yeah, okay.
Kelly,
I didn't know about that one.
Yep, we're ready.
Good afternoon. We'll call the House Committee on Revenue for Thursday, March the 10th. Open for session. Apologize for starting a couple of minutes after the hour. Today we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2368, which increases the corporate enterprise income tax limits for qualified research and basic research. Elizabeth?
Chairman Butler and committee members, what I've given you today is just a staff measure summary on this bill and then some new data that basically kind of gives a little more update than what we had like during orientation and stuff on the corporations that are claiming the research and development tax credit, as well as a state survey of the research and development tax credits in 2004, just how much, whether or not states have an R&D credit, and what is the R&D credit limit for different states. So you can just kind of have that as background. But basically, the bill in front of you increases that maximum annual cap on the research and development credit to $1 million and increases the number of years to carry forward the credit to 20 years. These changes are effective beginning tax year 2006. Then the bill increases that annual cap to $2 million and increases, again, the number of years of the carry forward to 20 years, and that's effective tax year 2008. So as far as background for the R&D credit, it was enacted in 1989. In last session, we had a lot of discussion on this, and it was dealing in House Bill 3183. And basically, that bill expanded the eligible fields of qualifying research to claim the R&D tax credit, and so that it conformed then with federal law. And that began then in tax year 2006. And it also increased the annual cap on the credit from $500,000, which is what it was under current law prior to 2003, and that's what it is right now, up to $750,000. But again, that begins tax year 2006. Now, under...
Elizabeth, let me just check. That conforms with federal law. The $750,000 is federal law as well.
Chairman Butler, no. I don't think there's an annual cap on in federal law for this credit.
So
their credit is bigger. It's 20% of the eligible expenses,
okay,
versus Oregon's
is
only
5%. No,
as best of my knowledge, there is not a cap.
Okay.
And I have looked into that, but if somebody wants to look into it further, they can let me know. But basically, with under current law, also you have a 5-year carry forward on this credit. This is increasing it to 20 years. And from looking at the most recent corporate tax return data for tax year 2002, what you see then in looking at this information is we kind of, when we were discussing an orientation about the unused credits, this is one of those credits that has a lot of unused credit right now. The R&D credit was claimed by 155 corporations, but only 68 of them actually had a reduction in their tax liability. 44%, which really corresponds to just 44% of those corporations. They claim $24.8 million as far as the total amount of R&D credits, but they actually only had used of the credit $3 million. So that's a pretty big difference there, about $21 million of unused corporate tax credit with the R&D. You've got 55% of the corporations claiming the R&D credit had no taxable income, or they had losses that exceeded their taxable income in 2002. And then also 38% of the corporations claiming the R&D credit claimed amounts that were less than $10,000. And what you're doing, again, is increasing that annual cap for those who were in this last group, like on this table here, it's group H, which are claiming $500,000 or more. So what you can see there is that there were only 11 corporations, or 7.1% of all the corporations that claimed an R&D credit, claimed amounts that were in excess of $500,000. Now, just recognize, too, there are, there could be some deficiencies in this data in the sense that corporations could just put down how much they're going to claim that year, how much they want to use. They don't, they're supposed to be reporting the total amount they're eligible for, but there's there's not any way in which the Department of Revenue goes in and unless they were going to audit all these returns, it's not something that they're checking to make sure that they have reported all the amount of credit that they could potentially have.
Elizabeth, why would a corporation underreport the amount of credit or the amount that's available for the credit if, in fact, there is a current five-year credit carry forward?
That's right. Yeah, Chairman Butler, I would think the only reason would just be from convenience sake. If they thought that they were only going to use, you know, $500,000, then they would put $500,000 even though they may have be eligible for $1 million. And so it's not, it's just, you just report total credits claimed. It's not saying how much of that credit is carried forward, you know, so you don't, it's just all lumped together in the total amount of credit that is eligible.
Does the actual credit show up as a separate item on the face or the page two of a corporate 20? Income tax return?
Chairman Butler, yeah. I mean, you've got total claims, total credits
claims. Total claims, whether or not there was any liability due on
right.
the return.
That's right.
Okay, so that's where those numbers come
from. That's where those numbers
okay.
come from. And so there you can see that just in this one category of $500,000 and above, you know, they claim $13.6 million, but they only used $632,805.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Hatt.
I think I'm on the same issues as you. I think I'm asking the same question. Could you explain hypothetically why that happens?
Well,
say 24 million in total R&D credits used, but only 3 million of the total.
Okay, so Chairman Butler and Representative Hatt, first of all, you could have a situation where someone would be claiming $1 million because that's how much they have in total credits. And it could be a combination of credits from prior years brought forward. And then they have this annual cap, right, in law, in which they can only use $500,000.
But the maximum credit is only $750,000, right? So how could they claim $1 million?
Chairman.
$750,000
yeah.
in 2006, isn't it?
Right. And $750,000 in 2006, it's $500,000 right now.
Okay.
But Representative Hatt, what they're required to do is report total credits
okay.
that they are eligible for.
Okay.
So that's the key point here is I'm just saying they're self-reporting this total credits that they are, you know, have available
okay.
to them. Okay, now obviously it would be in their best interest from an accounting point of view to report it all. Then if the Department of Revenue went in and audited that corporation, they could see, okay, yeah, they only used, you know, $100,000 of that, you know, $1 million in credits, and they've got $900,000 they can carry forward.
It's not an either-or credit. In other words, you're still reflecting their R&D as an expense, and then you're making a separate calculation of the R&D times the percent, what is it, 5%?
5%.
To come up with the maximum amount of the credit. And then the maximum credit, if you put $1 million in R&D, 5% would be $50,000. If you have no taxable income, that 50 just parlays into whatever larger amount with the five-year carryover, and then start lopping off the five-year-old credits if you haven't used it. First in, first out.
Chairman Butler, you mean in terms of
using
the oldest credits
right.
that you have,
okay.
yeah. So
was that responsive?
Yes.
Yeah. And Representative Hatt, the other big component is just tax liability. So, you know, in 2002, we were still in a recession for corporations. So that's why you see such a huge drop in the amount that they can actually use. And you see there of these, the last column there is a net Oregon tax paid. You see that those corporations, even with, you know, $21 million in unused credits, they still pay $12 million in corporate tax. And that's just because some corporations used up all their credits, others didn't. So that's basically the important point to recognize is here we're basically looking with the increase in this annual cap at affecting these 11 corporations. I mean, that's just the 1 year. But roughly when you look at some of the history of those corporations that are in this $500,000 and above category, it's usually around 10 to 15. You haven't seen too much fluctuation in that. But then the other important point to recognize is when you're increasing that carry forward then, now that's going to affect all these different income groups because basically you've got you know, unused tax credits in each one of these categories, you know, from the zero to 10,000 all the way up to 500,000 and above. So all these folks, you know, then could potentially be using more of their credits by having a longer carry forward. So that all those different groups will be impacted by this bill, the way it's written. So basically that was the main thing I wanted to point out, and then next week when we have it up again, I'll give you a revenue impact.
Thank you very much, Elizabeth. Any reference on your state-by-state sheet here as to the length of carryover? The 20-year carryover is a healthy carryover.
Chairman Butler, I did not go in and address that particular provision. I could look through my book and see.
I know
if
California has a 5 years. Taken over 5 years. I'm wondering if that is their credit carryover. I don't know that that's mandatory. Joe will have some information. Thank you very much. Questions for Elizabeth before we hear from the presenter of this bill? Representative Wisden, thank you for coming. We're honored by your presence. Please present for us, if you will.
Thank you, Chairman Butler, and honorable members of this committee. Thank you for allowing me to testify in favor of HB 2368. For the record, I am Representative Gene Wisnett from District 53. Also, for your information, I worked for the Undersecretary of Defense for Research and Development in the Pentagon from 1985 through 1988. I'm not an engineer, but worked on cooperative research and development international agreements, including serving as a team member, negotiating with foreign allies to do cooperative research and development on strategic defense initiative projects, which you may have known as Star Wars projects. Based upon my experience, I have a true appreciation for the benefits of research and development and the tremendous costs of research and development. Many research and development projects never advance to full production. This is the reason the U.S. Department of Defense was seeking foreign allies' cooperation and money for the Strategic Defense Initiative research and development projects. On the other hand, when a research and development project results in full production, the economic benefit is tremendous and usually results in spinoff projects. Thus, I strongly recommend this committee approve HB 2368, which will encourage our Oregon companies to invest in research and development projects, but allow research and development justifiable credit. I think also I'm glad to carry this bill for the Associated Oregon Industries, and I'm sure that had nothing to do with the fact that I'm a Cardinal fan, as Mr. Swinehart is. Hope that doesn't prejudice anyone on the committee. With market forces driving many manufacturing jobs overseas, the Oregon economy must continue to work on creating an environment that can retain, develop, and attract research and development industries. HB 2368, by increasing the maximum research and development tax credit, will provide further incentives and attractions for this industry to continue to expand in Oregon and bring with it higher than average salaries to replace low-paying service jobs. Currently, the maximum R&D credits is $750,000. This bill proposes raising that limit to $1 million in 2006 and $2 million in 2008. And as you've discussed, we'll also extend these credits from 5 years to 20 years. Research and development takes a long time to come up with a full production project. There are many different versions of research and development tax credits that Mr. Swinehart will talk to you about, which are already in place competing states. Neighboring California, as well as Illinois and Pennsylvania, have no limit on their tax credits. Maryland has a $6 million annual limit, and in Idaho, the tax credit cannot exceed the taxes due. And the major hotbeds of North Carolina and Texas cap their credits at 50% of taxes owed. The competition to attract and retain the R&D industry is fierce. HB 2368, by raising the limits on tax credits and extending the time period of these credits, will allow Oregon to remain competitive nationwide and prove to be a worthy option for this growing industry. The passage of this bill will have strong impact nationwide and prove to the industry that we are very serious about providing a business-friendly environment. This morning in my Ways and Means Education Subcommittee, we heard from the Oregon State University College of Forestry dean, and he brought along with him Ray Jones from the Roseburg Forest Products and talked about some of the R&D that the timber industry has done. We learned about the importance and the value of research and development to our Oregon University college system, including the agriculture and forest experimental stations. In agriculture, we're even using robotics in agriculture and also using technology to monitor our fields
We learned from Judge Pryor about how technology is helping her grow more wheat, the right wheat for international markets with this. So we have experience in this state. We're the leaders in technology, and we should all be willing to support this bill. So thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee for allowing me to testify and support this bill. I do believe in it. And if I'll be glad to take questions. If the chair then would excuse me, I would like to.
Thank you very much, Representative Wisdom. We recognize that you have two places you've got to be at this particular hour, and that's sometimes difficult. Questions of Representative Wisdom while he's here? Thank you very much. Again, we're honored by your presence. We appreciate your presentation and bringing the bill forward. Now, let's see. Joe Schweinhart.
Yeah.
You.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Joe Schweinhart, for the record, Associated Oregon Industries, and I greatly appreciate this opportunity to discuss House Bill 2368 with you today. Small, medium, and large companies now use the R&D tax credits. Many companies have more R&D ideas than they do money. R&D credits provide critical, important incentives for funding new ideas. A strong, permanent R&D credit will enable Oregon companies to bring more products to market, increasing employment, and raising the standard of living for all Oregonians. The indirect benefits of R&D are exponential. Oregon R&D spurs growth in nearly every sector of the economy. Benefits can range from new medical treatments in our hospitals to better consumer products in the shelves of our small businesses. If Oregon is going to be part of an innovative economy, R&D must grow, and we need the incentive for it to grow. R&D fuels job creation, innovation, competitiveness, and growth. With the growth of international markets, R&D will become even more critical for our manufacturing. Oregon companies must compete globally. Our manufacturing base has become more dependent on R&D from new products. The credit is designed to encourage the type of commercial R&D investment that enables new companies, small business to bring new products to market. According to R&D Magazine report in January of 2005, the funding forecast sees major R&D opportunities in the near future. Some of those opportunities will include medical technologies, information mining and assessment, and energy production. To look into the future of Oregon is to look to the future of our technology and manufacturing industries. R&D will play a vital role in positioning Oregon in global competition. Oregon needs to be a competitive player in that competition, and we need this bill to help move it on its way in the future. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a few comments about some of the information we had from staff. Just to say that there was a comment about the percentage of companies of less than $10,000 claiming a credit. And I think that's a good indicator of the small companies that are involved here and the small companies, startup companies, that use R&D tax credits. And there was also a comment about 55% of those companies paid no taxes in 2002. And the reason for that is 2002, we weren't in a very good economy. There weren't a lot of people making money to pay taxes on that money. And this is the unused credit was probably because the economy was in a downturn. So what I'm trying to say today is we were interested in increasing the amount of time from 5 to 20 years just for that reason, because there is cyclical movements in this industry. It's up a few years, down a few years. In fact, I understand that by 2007, they are talking about the technology industry flattening out. There's a little bit of growth in it now. It's not growing real fast, but it's going to flatten out potentially in 2007, as will a lot of the economy in general. It's going to be very good to have those tax credits ready. It's going to be very good to let companies use this tax credit and make us the major hub that we want to be for R&D growth. Representative Wisnett talked about North Carolina and Texas that are 50%. Both those states are major, major research mm-hmm. centers.
Yep.
And there's a lot of states out there competing for some of this money. And what we want to do is try to hold our own and increase our ability to protect those that we have and keep those that we have here in Oregon, and to possibly increase our viability as a home for more of those as they go from small business research centers to larger research centers. So I urge everyone to take a close look at House Bill 2368 and support it.
Thank you very much, Joe. Questions for Mr. Schweinhart?
Yes, Representative Hass. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm very supportive of this. We've talked, and if I was king, I would remove the ceiling. But I do want to follow up on the chair's concern or question about the 20 years of carryover. It does seem like a long time. And I don't, when I look through this short list of other states, I don't know if any other states are doing that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hoster, you're right. I don't see any other states doing that. And that may be one advantage that we can give R&D companies. Like I said, there's some cyclical movement on those companies. I mean, some of those reasons they didn't claim any credits because there wasn't any to claim. But that doesn't mean they can't use it and need it in the future as they progress that 20 years long. Maybe 20 isn't the right number. Maybe we should make it 10. But I think we need to make it more than 5 to give some incentive for those companies to keep using it. And I think you'll see, honestly, in the near future, as the economy, hopefully, as this economy starts to rebound, that these companies will be using more of it. We're also in a situation where last session we expanded the use of it. So more and smaller, medium-sized companies can use it. We will also see a change in how it's used and where it's used. And I think we want the ability of that credit to grow as those industry grow. Mm-hmm.
Yes, Representative Galizio is right.
Joe, what? Although we will not receive the revenue impact until next week, is that right, Elizabeth?
Yeah.
So what to you would be an acceptable, considering the conditions that we're in right now, what would be an acceptable revenue impact dollar figure for you?
Well, I can tell you what we've kind of, obviously we're not the experts like legislative revenue, but we've looked at an impact of about $4 million is what we've looked at for this biennium. So it's not a high cost. And like I said, industry is gearing up, and R&D is somewhat struggling, and we want to emphasize everything we can to keep them strong here. And I don't see a major impact.
Let me just confirm that. That would be in addition to the, let's see, the 2002 returns. The amount used mm-hmm. was $3 million and change. Mm-hmm. And, Joe, your understanding would be then that, and because this begins beginning tax year 2006, calendar year 2006, so for the current biennium, well, for a two-year period, you're estimating that this would come out to be $4 million for the full biennium. So right now it looks like it must be in the vicinity of around $6 million per biennium, $3 million per year.
Okay. Chairman Butler, what are you referring to as
I'm
far
sorry.
As current?
I'm sorry. The amount of the credit being used okay. right now for 2002.
Yes, it was $3 million.
It's $3
right.
million. So mm-hmm. for a biennium, it would be in the vicinity of $6
million. That's right.
And Joe is telling us it would be, they're thinking it would be in response to Representative Galizio's question, the response would be the acceptable limit would be in the vicinity of $10 million. Is that what you're saying, Joe?
Well, no, what I was saying, Mr.
Total,
Chairman.
Total $10 million, this would be an additional?
No, I was seeing this in 2002 as $3 million, and then this biennium, that may be $4 million. So it's only going up a million.
Oh, only up a million per year.
Yeah. For
$2 million
for this biennium.
Yeah.
Okay.
And like I said, I'm estimating off of what the numbers were last time.
I just wanted to be responsive. Wanted the response to be responsive to Representative Galizio's question, and that is how much is the level you anticipate? So you anticipate seeing the $3,006,000 figure that's presented to us by legislative revenue today going perhaps to $4 million per year, which would be a $2 million total revenue hit.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, you got to understand this is just my estimate. So,
okay, and you feel like that with an extra $1 million per year, $2 million per biennium, that this would be sufficiently, could sufficiently attract new employment? That's what we're looking for, I assume, out of this.
And Mr. Chairman, we're looking to not only attract new employment, we're looking to give those companies over here more ability to expand, more ability to do more R&D and get some credits and move them forward. So it's not, we're not going out there and saying, let's give everybody, like some of these other states, $6 million limit every year. What we're trying to do is give them the ability to expand from where they are now.
Joe, I want to go in just a little bit different direction than perhaps we have gone before in this discussion and couch it in different, a little bit different terms. I'm anxious about what the overall credits look like that we are actually getting a measurable performance out of the credit. In other words, who do we tax $3 million to a year more in order to provide a $3 million tax credit for R&D?
And so the question I have is relative to this extra $1 million or the full $4 million that we would anticipate, just using that as a rough figure. What do you think that brings to Oregon overall? If we were to say, we want to place X as a performance measure, maybe X is happier families and better marriages, maybe X is 1,000 more people that work at family wage jobs, maybe X is cleaner streets, whatever it is, what would be a performance measurement that you would look for in exchange for the $4 million annually?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think what I'm looking at here is when we say we're going to expand this, we're looking, first of all, R&D is not cheap. Okay, so expanding it is somewhat keeps up with what we're doing, but we also, last session, expanded the number of people that could use it. And I think with it not being cheap, we're hoping by expanding this number that we'll have more companies involved, more companies who want to stay here and use it, and see an expansion, which will mean an expansion in employment, expansion in R&D itself, research and development itself, and hopefully start those small companies growing and staying here and providing employment and everything that's involved with it.
Joe,
if that's what you're getting at.
That's in part what I was getting at. Let me couch my question in just a little bit different format. As I'm looking at the IRC 41H that's involved here, I'm seeing that these are all kinds of expenses, including some overhead, some capitalized expenses. A lot of it is labor and machinery and equipment depreciation related to those kinds of things. Do you have any feel for out of the $1 million that we would anticipate this additional amount costing us, how much does that equate to in capital investment and property plant equipment by existing industries in Oregon, new industries in Oregon? How many new family wage jobs how much would be expended? What percentage would have to be expended times the rate on this particular credit in order to come up with that $1 million? I guess the elements that you might feel from amongst your members, what that might represent.
Mr. Chairman, that'd be very difficult to calculate because it'd be a question of who's using it and why they're using it, of course. But what I would see is if they are using it for personnel, then they're hiring people better than average wage jobs. If they are using it for capital, then that means they're a growing company. And I would see this as an advantage either way.
Probably investing in property that's going to go on the property tax rolls as well.
Potentially, yes. And the idea is it helps exponentially net growth. So we've got not only R&D companies that are your high tech, but you've also got manufacturing that does a lot of R&D. So you're making an investment in the future of those areas.
Elizabeth, from the Federal Register, do we have a breakdown of what each dollar is that's invested in what a dollar is invested in that generates a credit out here, where the dollar is invested over here in order to extract the credit? Do we have anything from the Federal Register on that?
Chairman Butler, I can look into that. I haven't seen anything, but it could be out there.
Joe, I would appreciate it if you'd work with staff on that. I guess colleagues, as we roll down this road of credits and deductions and capacity to try and build Oregon's economy, I think that we ought to have some idea of what it is that we're looking for. Is it more jobs? Is it more of the jobs that you're talking about, Joe, on behalf of the industries that are members of AOI? Is it more in capital development? Are they going to put more property, plant, and equipment together? Are they going to put more money into test tubes than they are into human consumption and those kinds of things?
Mr. Chairman, the only thing I can tell you that all of the above. I think you're going to see a lot of that. It just depends on any individual company. We'll look and see if we can find some type of factors involved there. Maybe there is something at the federal level that does.
Well, manufacturing is probably a little bit different. Oregon is twice as dependent on manufacturing jobs as any other state.
Yes.
So manufacturing probably has a different blend.
Yes.
All I'm after is just some place to start and commence the discussions of benchmarking what it is that we're after for in exchange for the additional $1 million that we would be that we would be potentially offering for industry to make these kinds of investments. And that's I think that that's a fair question. Our colleagues in the House and the Senate are going to be asking this question repeatedly and increasingly about what do we, when we tax somebody an extra million to make up for that $1 million in credit, what are we going to give back to Oregonians in terms of new jobs, property, plant, equipment on the payroll or on the property tax records in XYZ counties? Those are the kinds of questions that I think are appropriate to ask.
Right. Mr. Chairman, I think you're correct. And I think you have to remember this is a tax credit. So unless they're making money and doing some type of economic growth situation, they're not. It's not a factor. So,
and Joe, my question isn't to try and discourage them from making a profit. It's to find out what elements may be best benefited, and what it is that we're trying to accomplish. Certainly, the bottom line is that we want them to be profitable. We want them to be so profitable that they'll want to hire on lots more people and be able to take the maximum amount of the credit every year through R&D and then be able to employ lots of people and improve our communities. But in the meantime, if we could get some kind of a blend of where the current federal R&D monies are going in industry, that might give us a better flavor of what it is we're looking for.
I hope that's not being too onerous on your time.
And your spare time. What are you doing? Tax credit for that.
What are you doing the day after tomorrow? Or
right.
Okay. Other questions? I beg your pardon. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things that I'd be interested in is your or staff's guess at how much of these credits will be taken by traded sector companies and how much would be in manufacturing. I think those are two important things I'd like to know. And also, if I may...
Please follow up, Representative Riley.
Elizabeth, I noticed on your chart there's nothing that says what percent of the tax credits each state is giving. We're giving 5%, and I don't know what the other states are doing.
Chairman Butler and Representative Riley, I don't think I put it specifically what percentage. So I could go through and try to add that column. And
I also noticed there are some states missing, and if you take a look at that.
Washington is missing.
Some of them are missing just because they don't have an income tax, a corporate tax.
Got it. Thank you.
And then, Representative Riley, as far as your other question about, I didn't, on the very last paragraph here of your staff major summary, I did kind of slowly, just put a couple lines in there about what portion of the total is manufacturing as far as taking this R&D credit. So I do have that breakdown by industry sectors. So okay. If that, I have a table like that. I didn't copy it for all of you, but
I'd like to see
sure.
that.
Sure.
Thank you.
Other question. Representative Boquist is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You made mention of the year, 20 years, 10 years, so on and so forth. I mean, I guess for the record, I'm involved in two ventures that have 7-year shelf lives before between R&D and actual production. And so I know the 5-year mark is not the right mark, but if the mark were 10 years, hypothetically, and you did yourself raise the 10-year issue, what's the upside and what's the downside?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Boquist, without having taken this out to 20 years or even 10 years, we've been at 5 years, what I see, again, is that whether it's 10 years or 20 years, is the ability for those companies, again, because the manufacturing is somewhat cyclical, they'll have a larger, longer opportunity to take advantages of those credits. And therefore, it will go back in the company because there will be times when they will not pay taxes because they haven't made any profit and there hasn't been anything there.
Right. Right.
So they're keeping their head above water. What it does is give them a longer time to use those credits.
Thank you.
Further questions, or Mr. Swinert, or staff? Colleagues, just by way of reminder, tomorrow is at the Revenue Office, I believe. our plan is to call. Can you just...
Mr. Chair, the meeting is at 1 o'clock at Department of Revenue, and it will be your meet in the atrium. I think that's Susan Browning will be there in the conference room with what they call the pitch.
Oh, okay.
So, but the first thing you have to do, if you haven't been over to Department of Revenue, you've got to sign an agreement that you won't try to take returns, somebody else's return out of the drawers.
Oh, they're not giving samples this year. Oh, okay.
No, you can have a blank return. But you have to sign a security agreement and be badged and so forth. And they'll take you through the process. They expect to have you out of there before 2:30.
Excellent. And do we need to be there a few minutes before 1 o'clock in order to be processed, Paul?
I think that would help.
Okay.
I'll probably wait, you know, a couple minutes after.
And the revenue building is, what, second or third building here on the mall?
Right. So it's right across the across both the fountains and across the center street.
Okay. And it's the first building on the other side of the center, isn't it? Mm-hmm. On the right-hand side.
Yes, it's the right of the fountain there.
And it's a gorgeous walk. I did it this morning. It's absolutely gorgeous. Representative Berger.
Is it not the one that's catty-corner from McDonald's, Paul? Thank you.
Now I don't know where I'm at. Okay. Further questions? Thank you very much, Paul, for that. We'll go ahead then and close the public hearing on House Bill 2368, and we'll close for the day. Thank you very much.